Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, text 23. Marashraya Katha Mrishta Shrinvanti Katayanti Cha Tapanti Vividas Tapa Naitan Madgata Chetasaha Marashraya Katha Mrishta Shrinvanti Kuntayanti Cha Tapanti Vividas Tapa Naitan Madgata Chetasaha Marashraya Katha Mrishta Shrinvanti Katayanti Cha Tapanti Vividas Tapa Naitan Madgata Chetasaha Marashraya, about me. Katha, stories. Mrishta, delightful. Shrinvanti, they hear. Katayanti, they chant. Cha, and Tapanti, inflict suffering. Vividha, various. Tapa, the material miseries. Na, do not. Etan, unto them. Matgata, fixed on me. Chetasa, their thoughts. Translation. Engage constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus, do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. Purport. There are multifarious miseries in material existence, those pertaining to the body and the mind, those imposed by other living entities, and those imposed by natural disturbances. But a sadhu is not disturbed by such miserable conditions because his mind is always filled with Krishna consciousness. And thus, he does not like to talk about anything but the activities of the Lord. Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunar Nirvarnane. He engaged his words only in glorification. Excuse me. Maharaj Ambarish did not speak of anything but the pastimes of the Lord. Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunar Nirvarnane. He engaged his words only in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadhus are always interested in hearing about the activities of the Lord or his devotees. Since they are filled with Krishna consciousness, they are forgetful of the material miseries. Ordinary conditioned souls, being forgetful of the activities of the Lord, are always full of anxieties and material tribulations. On the other hand, since the devotees always engage in the topics of the Lord, they are forgetful of the miseries of material existence. Om Ganeshimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militangena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In this section of chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Kapila Dev, is instructing his mother, first of all, about the need for devotional service and the exclusive nature of devotional service as the only remedy for the situation of material existence. Beyond the other methods of self-realization, which are practically impossible to achieve in the present age. In any case, in all times, in all places, in all situations, devotional service, bhakti yoga, is required. That bhakti yoga may start off with impurities, tinges of karma and jnana, karmic activity and metaphysical speculation. But real success in life means that the bhakti becomes cleansed of any ulterior motive. What is an ulterior motive? Extraneous motive? Anything that is not directly for Krishna's pleasure. We are being trained in devotional service through education and practice. And the goal of that education and practice is how to please Krishna simply for Krishna's pleasure. Now that may seem a long way ahead, but just the beginning, when we start to think, is what I'm doing giving Krishna the best pleasure? That is an extraordinary event in life. Because for countless births in the material world, we have never considered what is the best for Krishna's pleasure. To reach that point when we're considering how to please someone in the best way, that is the sure symptom of the beginning of love. That love for Krishna is eternally established in our hearts. As Lord Chaitanya explains, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Saju Kabunoi, Shravanade Shuddha Chitte, Koraye Doi. Pure love of Krishna is eternally established in the core of the living being. And it's revived by the authorized process of hearing and chanting. What has happened to our pure love of Krishna? It has become disrupted by the illusory energy. Due to our contact with the illusory energy, our love is being aimed this way, that way, but everywhere except directly to Krishna. Karanam gunasangosya sadasad yoni janmasu, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. The problem is contact with material nature. That contact with material nature, gunasanga, distorts and disrupts our loving capacity. I often explain how everyone likes to love. Everyone feels love-starved. You want to be loved and you want an object for your love. That's the story of material existence. But our loving urge can only be satisfied when directed to Krishna. The problem is that the illusory energy has disrupted our natural loving expression. This takes some humility to admit, because generally the false ego of the conditioned soul likes to convince the conditioned soul that you know what love is, you know what you're missing, you know what you're needing. But actually, because of the interference by the Maya Shakti, we have lost our memory, our knowledge of what is real love and how to love. So the bhakti yoga process reduces and gradually kicks out that interference caused by the illusory energy. that disruption. If we realize how much we have been disrupted, we would be shocked. We think we're living a normal life. We think we're proceeding in a normal way through material existence. But actually, we are in a state of severe disruption, severe interference, because of our attachment to material existence. We don't see the interference. We don't see the disruption. So we try to love in this way, love in that way, and the end result is always simply the same: frustration. No effectiveness at all. This is the story of material existence. All the plans, all the efforts, political, economic, social, relationships, they all lead to frustration of our loving capacity. Now that Lord Kapiladeva has presented devotional service to his mother, Devahuti, he then is going to explain to you how devotional service arises in the association of devotees. The two are necessary: devotional service and devotees. He's going to describe that once you understand the value of the association of devotees, then you will arrange to become attached to that association. The more we become attached to the association of devotees, the less we become attached to material existence. So Lord Kapiladeva is going to be very clear about that. All right, take your attachment to the material world. Everyone wonders what to do about that attachment for material existence and its various components and features. We will say, well, I'm not attached to all of material existence, but there are a few things. Just a few things. Everyone always says like that. Just a few things. What to do about that? We become so baffled. Oh. How can I ever deal with these attachments? But Lord Kapiladeva gives you the easy method. Apply your capacity for attachment to the service of devotees. That means you're applying your attachment to Krishna, because the devotees are only thinking of Krishna and serving Krishna. First, Lord Kapiladeva explains the marginal characteristics of such devotees to whom you should apply your attachment. Tatikshava karunika suhita sarvadehinam ajata shatava santo. These are the decorations of the sadhu, sadhu bhushana, tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities. In these verses, he's describing the essential characteristics of the sadhu. So, from the external point of view, you see the marginal characteristics. Oh, tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities. No enemies. But what is at the core? What's propelling those external characteristics, which are so wonderful? What's propelling those external characteristics or marginal characteristics is something even more wonderful, the essential, without which there won't be any of those external characteristics of tolerance, mercy, friendliness to all living entities, having no enemies. So what are the essential or core characteristics that make everything work? And you're hearing about that in this verse. Engage constantly in chanting and hearing about me. the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they're always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. And in the previous verse, you heard, such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. So this is the essence. When you have the essence, everything else will follow. So we are not so much the International Society for Anartha Consciousness. Often devotees, in their sincere attempts to serve Krishna, become very absorbed in, oh, my anarthas, and my unwanted, undesirable characteristics. We want to get rid of those, obviously. What is glorified in material existence is abhorred in devotional existence. Material existence glorifies lust, anger, greed, envy. But as soon as we take up the bhakti process seriously, we realize those things are horrible. They have given us so much trouble. As Raghunath Das Goswami prays, I've served such merciless masters for so long. Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, illusion. They, even though I've served them so vigorously and faithfully, they never give me vacation time. Just think. You all who work, you know, you have some weeks a year vacation time. You expect some days off. Every week you expect some days off, and of course you expect some annual vacation time. But Raghunath Das Goswami is explaining. The senses are merciless taskmasters. They never give you a break. You may think, I have served them so nicely. I have surrendered to lust. I have surrendered to greed, envy. All right, now they'll leave me alone for a while. It doesn't work like that. Only in our imagination does it work. But we soon find out that we're on what social scientists call the hedonistic treadmill. We run, we run, we run, we run on the treadmill. We're serving those merciless taskmasters, but we never get anywhere in that we're never satiated, we're never satisfied. So our whole life becomes a chase for more, more, more gratification. And what does the illusory energy tell you? If you just get a little bit, you'll be satisfied, and that'll be it. Just a little bit. You're not going to be like everyone else. You just want a modest amount of gratification. Everyone thinks their amount is modest. And the others are screwing up the world because they want too much. But you're having your share. And you, of course you could use a bit more. But the others, they are causing the problem. We serve these taskmasters so faithfully. That's the amazing thing. Can you see in your sojourn through material existence how faithfully we have served these masters? Carrying out their commands. Surrendering to their demands. But there's never any relief. The relief is only in our mind that I'm going to get it. We imagine that. I'll do this, I'll do that, and then finally I'll let it all go. This is in our imagination. So how to solve this problem that we have manufactured in our mind? What is that problem? The false expectations that material existence will grant us peace and satisfaction and fulfillment. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls this Asha Pasha Shataya Bada. bound by a network of hundreds upon hundreds of false hopes. It's humiliating, I know, to think that. I'm bound by a fishnet of false hopes. Because without hope, how can we proceed in material existence? If you want to live a material life, how can you go to work without any hope? How can you carry on your family life, your family affairs, without hope? Well, what is that hope for? Maybe not now, maybe not this year, but next year. I'll be happier. I'll finally be satisfied if I just keep going, keep going. So how to solve this problem? Lord Kapila Dev says, you get out of this trap by applying the attachment for the association of saintly persons. That's the secret. You remember these key verses. Prasangam ajaram pasam atmana kavayo vidu saeva sadushu kritto moksha dwaram apavritam. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation, moksha dwaram apavritam. And later, Lord Kapila Dev is going to say the same point about opening the door to liberation. Tajoshnat asya upavaga vartmani. He's going to explain that hearing about Krishna and the association of devotees swings the door wide open to liberation. But here again, we're dealing with something marginal. A real devotee is not concerned with liberation from material existence. A real devotee is simply concerned how my service to Krishna can be improved. That is the goal of a real devotee. It doesn't matter, I take birth after birth. Is my service to Krishna improving? Well, this is how astounding bhakti is. Every intelligent person wants freedom from material existence. You don't want to suffer. But here, the Vaishnavs are simply thinking, service, service, service. How can my service improve? Never mind if I take birth after birth. That's not the point. This attitude that the Vaishnavs have of simply how to improve my service, that actually in of itself is far beyond liberation. Or looked at another way, it's the real liberation. In other words, the material body will run its course. That's all right. I'm focused on how to improve service to Krishna. The joy of the devotee is always thinking how to improve the service, how to make it more pure. How to always think what is best for Krishna. This concern takes over our whole life, no matter what ashram we're in. Brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, sannyasis, they're all thinking. They should be thinking, what is best for Krishna's pleasure? How can I know that more? How can I do that more? It's this desire that takes over your life. And that desire that takes over your life comes by the association with devotees. And in that association of devotees, as we discussed Sunday night, you get to hear about and talk about Krishna. And simply by that process of hearing and talking about Krishna in the association of devotees, your spiritual advancement increases. Materialists have a hard time understanding how simply talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, gives you the perfection of life. And if we're infected by Mayavad philosophy, it's hard for us to think how, by talking about the characteristics, activities, and qualities of someone, that leads to the ultimate acquisition, the ultimate perfection of life. If we're infected by Mayavad philosophy, consciously or unconsciously, we think that beyond Krishna's activities, beyond Krishna's qualities, there is the spiritual cloud or the spiritual light or the spiritual oneness. But those who read Bhagavad Gita closely know that such a conjecture, such a hypothesis is pure nonsense. As I often explain, as soon as you think the words beyond Krishna, you're just speaking babble. It's nonsensical. It's like saying sky flower or horse's eggs. Beyond Krishna, it doesn't make sense. If it makes sense to you, that shows there's a problem. And indeed, we have to confront ourselves. How is it I think that the two words beyond Krishna make sense or have some meaning? No. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Mata pratanam nanya kinjit asti dhananjaya. Arjuna, dhananjaya, there is nothing beyond me. Can Krishna really mean that? Or is this just some kind of, well, fanatical or exclusivist statement? We have to understand how indeed there is nothing beyond Krishna. Nothing means not Paramatma, the Supersoul, not Brahman, the all-pervading oneness, not Vishnu, not even Narayan. Just to convince us thoroughly of this point, Rupa Goswami has given us Laghu Bhagavatamrita, in which he firmly establishes Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead. Otherwise, persons will think, oh, you're just being exclusive, you're being sectarian. Yes, Krishna is nice, but there's also other ways of looking at the Supreme Absolute Truth. So yes, in bhakti we acknowledge there are other ways of looking at the Supreme Absolute Truth. That's all right, but still there is the ultimate way. So in this way, the Vaishnava is simultaneously non-sectarian and very Krishna-focused. We understand that there are different views of the Supreme. We appreciate them all, but we know how to rank them. Higher than Brahman realization is Supersoul realization. Higher than Supersoul realization is Bhagavan realization. And within Bhagavan realization, within the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, it is the possessor of all opulence. Still, there's further distinction. There's Narayan in Vaikuntha, and then there is Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. In Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you get to see the whole panorama. As Gopakumar tours the material and spiritual worlds, you get to see everything in perspective. So again, we are simultaneously universal, ecumenical, non-sectarian, and Krishna-focused all at the same time. Very hard for an ordinary person to understand this. The Krishna devotee sees the whole picture. He sees, she sees how karma fits in, how metaphysical speculation fits in, how mystic yoga fits in. We see how dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, religion performed for the sake of economic development, for the sake of sense gratification, and then finally exhaustion and you concern yourself with liberation. We see all those elements of a real human civilization fit into the picture. And then, what does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? Beyond this dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, beyond these elevated principles of material civilization, which our societies today don't have, beyond religion performed for the sake of economic development, for the sake of sense gratification, only to become exhausted and then want liberation. Beyond all that, Mahaprabhu says, prema pumarto mahan, love of Krishna is in the fifth category. So we see all the aspects, all the facets, how they fit together. We appreciate how there are other religious teachers propounding other shastras. We see that anyone who is propounding, putting forth God consciousness is doing good. At the same time, what is the standard of Srimad Bhagavatam? That standard is stated in the second verse of the first canto. Dharma projita kaitavocha paramo namatsaranam satam. This Srimad Bhagavatam completely removes, doesn't allow the entrance of any kind of kaitava dharma, cheating dharma. So what is cheating dharma? Dharma done for any material reason has no entrance in Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, this shows how the Vaishnava is ecumenical, broad-minded. He or she can see the whole picture, how everything fits together. But we're exclusivists because we're fixed on the goal of pure bhakti. Later in the first canto, it is stated, Savai bhumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshade. Ahoituki apratiyata yinatma supersedati. That spiritual system is first class, is the best that allows for the development of pure love of God with no material motives and therefore no interruptions. So this is being broad-minded. This is being open-minded. Okay, bring your spiritual system, bring your form of dharma, and if it is without material motivation, then it's first class. In other words, Bhagavatam is giving you the parameters or the metrics by which to measure any spiritual approach, any spiritual system. This is how glorious Bhagavatam is. It's not just saying, this is the best. It's saying, this is how you evaluate the best. If the shoe fits, then wear it. If indeed your spiritual system, your spiritual book, your spiritual teachings promote pure love of God, free from any ulterior motive, then all right, first class, the best. So the Bhagavatam presents what the standard is and then evaluates itself according to that standard. It presents the standard of pure bhakti and then shows you how everything in the Bhagavatam is leading to pure bhakti. Gradually we'll be able to see that. As Sanatana Goswami says in Krishna Lila Stava, every syllable of Bhagavatam is saturated with Krishna Prema. Gradually we'll be able to see that. You cannot judge simply based on your current sense perception. Just like a fruit, an unripe fruit, gradually in time ripens. Similarly, the depths of Bhagavatam that we perceive gradually increases over time. So we need to give ourselves room to spiritually grow. That means what we see now will be different from what we see in the future. if we stick to the principles of bhakti, our perception is always increasing. And our qualifications to love Krishna are always increasing. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that forgetfulness happens both for the devotees and for the rest. The devotees, because they're filled with thoughts of Krishna and discussions of Krishna, forget about the material miseries. And the others, because they've forgotten Krishna and his activities and qualities, they are filled with material miseries. So which way do you want your forgetfulness to go? Do you want to forget about Krishna and then remember all the material miseries? Or do you want to remember Krishna and forget about the material miseries? So this is our daily decision. And one thing that I know plagues us, one thing that bothers us is we really can't accept that simply by hearing and chanting about Krishna, I'll be happy. Think about that. We say it. Yes, chant Hare Krishna. When we meet others, we encourage them to chant. We encourage them to read the books of Krishna's glories. But do we really think we ourselves are going to be happy in that way? Or we say like that. Yes, yes, read Bhagavad Gita. Yes, chant japa. But how much are we into it? That's the question. If we want to see a significant major change in our life, we have to practice what we preach. How is it that I can be happy just by hearing Krishna's glories? Just by chanting Krishna's glories? Let me try. Otherwise, people will detect, oh, you say these things, but what about yourself? What are you actually tasting? And then we'll get very nervous and defensive. Oh, we're tasting. But in your heart, you feel very guilty. I know I'm not tasting. I don't put so much time, quality time for hearing and chanting. Of course, how can I? I'm so busy. Everyone understands. But I will tell others, fill yourself with the glories of Krishna. So as I often explain, every ashram can have his excuses why there's no time for hearing about Krishna with quality. It's not simply the grihasthas who can make excuses. Oh, the children, a job, this, that, cleaning the house. No, sannyasis can also make excuses. Oh, the traveling, oh, airport to airport, flight delays, flight changes, on and on and on it goes. Jet lag. Brahmacharis can make excuses. Oh, we are so lonely. We're not allowed to look at all the Vedic queens. We only have our little space in the ashram. And we are kept so busy day and night, we have no time for reading. We have someone standing over us all the time saying, no time for reading, no time for reading. It's the fault of the schedule. What, is there someone up in the control tower, like in a prison? I'm watching to see if any brahmacharis are reading. No. The brahmacharis, they should take their wealth. Their wealth is opportunity for hearing and chanting about Krishna. You take it. That's a devotee. A devotee knows how to seize the opportunity for glorifying Krishna. Just That's the luxury. In every ashram, actually, but especially in the Brahmacharya ashram, you have to know how to grab it. Don't make excuses, just grab it. And then you'll see what happens. Similarly, householders have to be very proactive. How to manage their day and night. Because without tasting Krishna's glories, life becomes a grind. You want to get that experience of reading Bhagavad Gita over and over again, and each time is different. It's fresher. What's going on here? I've been reading this for so long, again and again, and each time it becomes more and more satisfying. You want that experience. You want the experience of chanting Hare Krishna, chanting your japa, and thinking, I'll never get to the bottom of this. I'll never get to the bottom of the pool of nectar chanting Hare Krishna. And as we discussed Sunday, when you start to experience Krishna's glories as fresher and fresher at every moment, then you know you're making spiritual advancement. The material tendency is what is called by social scientists adaptation. No matter what you do that's fresh, gradually that thing becomes lifeless and stale. You become adapted to it, habituated to it. It's like a carbonated beverage and all the fizz goes out. No one likes to drink a carbonated beverage when all the bubbles are gone. We call it flat. It's flat. No, take it away. Every material experience is like that. But we need to test for ourselves how, by chanting and hearing about Krishna, everything becomes fresher and fresher. You could say the carbonated beverage becomes more carbonated as time goes along. The fizz increases. Of course, that cannot happen on the material platform. So this is Lord Kapiladev describing to you the essential core nature of a sadhu. What drives the whole collection of spiritual characteristics is the core. Engage constantly in devotional service, chanting and hearing about me. Then the externals manifest. The externals are important. External doesn't mean not important, but still we have to understand what is at the core driving the whole show, so to speak. And that is the engagement in Krishna's service, especially based on constantly hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Then one is tolerant. One is merciful. One is friendly to all living entities. One avoids creating enemies. The way the material world works, it takes work to avoid creating enemies. It takes work, effort, to be friendly to all living entities. To make that kind of effort and labor, spiritual strength is required. You'll notice even in the association of devotees, there can be misunderstandings, lack of appreciation, misperceptions. So it requires an effort how to maintain proper relations with all types of devotees. Where does the strength come from to make such an effort? That comes from your core qualities of attachment to Krishna's glories. And of course, if one is truly attached to Krishna's glories, one will want others to taste those glories. And therefore, we always have in our mind Lord Chaitanya's statement, which is the same as Krishna's statement at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Sarva Dharma Prachaja, surrender to me. Lord Chaitanya says, Yare Deko Tare Koho Krishna Upadesh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach the science of Krishna. So many times Srila Prabhupada explained to us, this is the same thing. It's hard to get through our heads, though, isn't it? The same thing. You're wondering, how am I going to surrender to Krishna? Lord Chaitanya says, Yare Deko Tare Koho Krishna Upadesh. Same thing. So this is our life. And if we remain attached to the association of devotees, attached to the service of the sadhus, we'll relinquish our attachment to material life. All right, any questions? Yes? Can devotional service be for devatas? By performing service to Krishna, everyone benefits. Why just the devatas? They're just part of the picture. They are more pleased if you serve Krishna than if you serve them directly. They get more benefit. And you know what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Kamais tastaya hitigana prabhajyate nadevata. Those whose minds are distorted by lust, they approach the demigods directly. So you don't want to do that. But what is causing sometimes this focus on the demigods? It is that we really can't believe or accept that simply by chanting and hearing about Krishna, that accomplishes everything. It seems too simplistic, right? Performing some pujas for the devatas, that seems more practical, right? More tangible. But just hearing about Krishna's glories, this is our contamination. We're thinking like that. Again, it's unconscious impersonalism that really Krishna's activities are nice, as some persons were telling me at our retreat weekend. Yes, Krishna's cool. What's the word? Huh? Chilled? Okay, Krishna's chilled. But beyond Krishna, there must be something. This is our craziness. That's why we need knowledge of Krishna gained by serving Krishna in the association of devotees. To material vision, it doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. How? By sitting on the floor here, listening to Bhagavatam, you're directly associating with Krishna. To material senses, it doesn't make sense. But then I ask you, what does make sense to your material senses? Your material senses will tell you, material activities make sense, lust makes sense, greed makes sense, envy makes sense, selfish activity makes sense. Even materialistic social researchers admit, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, there's nothing else that you can do, so you might as well do it. So you convince us that material activities make sense. But who can do that? And it's true that to the material vision, spiritual activities make no sense. So therefore, we're facing the usual dilemma. Which one is crazy? The materialist will look at you and say, why are you doing that? And you look at the materialist and say, well, why are you doing that? There's not going to be an agreement. You just have to face the facts. As Krishna explains in Gita, Dvalbhuta Sarga Lokesmin Daiva Asraevacha. Since time immemorial, since the beginning of creation, there's always these two classes, divine and demonia. Nothing you can do to resolve that. It always goes on. Each side wonders, what are these others doing? One group says, let's forget Krishna. We don't mind being full of material anxieties and tribulations. The other group says, let us remember Krishna and we'll forget all about material anxieties and tribulations. Anything else? Yes? What do you do with your work? In other words, what's the goal of your work? Why do you go to work? To have a good time? No, why do you go to work? Okay, hold it right there. He tried to accelerate quickly past that. You go to work for money, right? And why do you need money? For yourself. For what about yourself? Only for you? Not to send to India? Only for you. No loans to pay off? So you're going to work to get money for you. No family? Huh? No, but you don't have your own family. All right. So then, you have to maintain yourself, yes? You're doing that? You're eating? You're sleeping? Huh? You're not married, so no question of mating. You're protecting yourself as much as you can from attacks of material miseries. So if all that's going on nicely, why not work for Krishna? Did I say something very radical? First, give yourself a bhakti lifestyle. You're doing that, right? And then, with your resources, help others to have a bhakti lifestyle. Simple. Then when you go to work, you'll remember Krishna. Because you're working to give yourself a bhakti lifestyle. You're already doing that, right? And you're also working to help others have a bhakti lifestyle. You'll be enlivened this way when you go to work. But why are you at work? You forget the central purpose. Are you at work to associate with others? Now answer me. Do you go to work because, oh, I want to be with these people? Huh? Do you? How many of you go to work because you want to be with the persons there? Unless you're working with devotees, that's something else. But generally, you don't go to work because, oh, I'm going to be with these people. It's going to be enlivening. Now, why do you go to work? Come on, admit it. So painful, huh? Just say it. No, just say, why do you go to work? No. It's like you can't bring yourself to say it, huh? Someone say it for him. Why does he go to work? Okay, they said it for you, all right? Huh? You may enjoy the work, but if they didn't pay you, would you go? Okay. We say all these flowery words. I enjoy my work. As soon as the pay stops, the work stops. So why is there this reluctance to face the facts? You go to work to get money. Is it very not proper to admit such a thing? So then the question is, what are you doing with the money? Then you have to think, whose money is it? So if you use the resources from your work, how to give yourself a bhakti lifestyle, and how to give it to as much of the world as your resources allow, then your consciousness at work will be different. Why do we always avoid this point? While you're tolerating at work the politics, the diplomacy, redundancies, downsizing, this, that, the other. Or sometimes there's even pressure to promote you, but you don't want to be promoted because the increased responsibility is not matched by a significant salary increase. So all these things are going on at work. But if you know why you're there, I'm there to get the resources for using for Krishna's purposes, then you'll remember Krishna. Just like Arjuna remembered Krishna while he's fighting. While Arjuna's fighting, he's thinking about the details of fighting. But the whole thrust of his fighting is to please Krishna. So therefore he's situated differently. His consciousness is situated differently. So this is practical. What are we doing with the fruits of our labor? Okay. Very simple. Anything else? Yes. He likes to go to the casino or what?
He visits, but not the
religion. So you're saying that the four regular principles, all of them, they give him problems. It's good that he's chanting and dancing, and let that continue because gradually he'll realize that if he wants to go on with the chanting and dancing, he needs to make some lifestyle adjustments. Especially he'll realize that if he cultivates knowledge, if he reads the books, he'll start to understand. So it's very good he's attached to chanting and dancing. Maybe it will go on like that for some years. And gradually, after a while, he'll start to think, this taste of chanting and dancing is far superior to those nasty activities of Kali Yuga. And certainly, after a while, sooner or later, and generally sooner, those nasty activities of Kali Yuga will show themselves to be completely troublesome. Just a matter of time. Because the illusory energy, Maya, never lets you see the whole picture at first. You just see the front end. You don't see the back end. And the front end seems to look nice. So let him go on chanting and dancing, but try to get him to cultivate some bhakti knowledge. There will be persons like that. Not everyone is so fortunate that immediately they want to take up everything. Yes, I'll follow the rules. I'll chant Hare Krishna every day. Not everyone's like that. So we have to be patient, considerate. Maybe you were like that, right? Just instant sadhu, right? Some persons are like that, some are not. We're open to all types of persons approaching bhakti. We're open to the express trains, and we're also open to the slow trains. And most persons are in between. So just encourage the person. Do some service for Krishna. And try to learn about Krishna. Even if that person does nothing more all his life than come and chant and dance, that person will get a human form in the next life and continue the bhakti from there. So as Krishna himself says, swalpamapya siddharmasya trayate matobaya, there's no loss on this path. Everything is gain. Sometimes, even amongst our own devotees, there are casualties. Yes? If they're Westerners, suddenly they just completely disappear. If they're from India, suddenly you just see them on Janmashtami, that's all. Right? That's how it works, right? So, even amongst our society of devotees, there are casualties. But there's never a loss. Devotional service is all gain. If you don't finish your Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, you start again in the next lifetime. Questions aside. Yes.
How do we start talking about Krishna in the association of devotees?
How do you start or how do you stop? Huh? Which one? But one thing, please understand, talking about Krishna's service and thinking about how to serve Krishna better is also talking and thinking about Krishna. So when you're constantly thinking, oh, how to improve this service, and you're talking to others about the devotional service, that is also talking and thinking about Krishna. And of course, there's also a time to chant Hare Krishna, discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. How do you start talking about Krishna with devotees? Open your mouth. You can simply say, Hare Krishna. This material body is a problem. Why did I take a material body? How is it the pure spirit soul has taken on a body of matter? When will I be able to serve Krishna without any material impediments? So you discuss like that. Anything can be discussed from a Krishna conscious point of view. Why are the politicians so bad? It's because the people don't understand the qualities of a real leader. Therefore, the people are going more into body consciousness than ever before. Because the people don't understand what are proper human qualities, they elect leaders who have no idea what are proper human qualities. Everything can be discussed from a Krishna conscious point of view. So just open your mouth and talk. The easiest way is, as Srila Prabhupada said, you fill yourself up with nectar so it's coming out of your ears and nose. How about that? Meanwhile, just keep dancing in kirtan. You'll be all right. Dancing is not ordinary. You're dancing for Krishna's pleasure. So who can object to this process? Chanting, dancing, filling yourself up with nectar so it comes out of your nose and ears? All right. I must take leave of you. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.